sleep. Debate.
Well, hello everyone.
Hello, hey, girls and gays. Welcome. And, you know, we accept more than that, but, you know, the vibe of it all is girls and gays.
Yeah, you know, this is a safe space, straight men, you're welcome. If you so choose to venture here. Well, welcome to Rate, Debate, Recreate, everyone. I'm Sammy Purcell.
And I'm Logan Keller.
And we're back for episode 10. Logan, I've got something to say to you. Got okay. A question.
Please ask away, Sammy.
War, what is it good for?
Absolutely nothing. Say it again.
Yes, good job. Literally nothing at all, except, you know, maybe giving us Derek Clennon a uniform. That's one positive.
I think it is good for that pause. Yeah, that's a good
definitely. God, I'm going to be a mess this episode.
Yeah, this episode might just become, it might devolve a bit from our thoughts on the musicals and turn into a thirst episode,
into
because
just how
I think that I at least have feelings very strongly about both shows, both about the content, but also about the content of the men in
yes.
And the quality of that content.
The quality of Derek Clenna in particular. if he ever listens to this, I'd be extremely embarrassed. So we're gonna move on.
Hey, D.
Oh my God, stop. I just side note really quick. I saw Anastasia in New York City, brag. And Derek Clenna was in it, and we stood outside, me and my sisters, we stood outside the stage door after, you know, like to see everyone. And it was really, really great. Had a great time. And you know Derek Clenna, he's also like the dumb DJ boyfriend in
Yes. Oh girl, I know. Yes. I know that as well as Nosferatu.
Very well versed in the filmographies of Nosferatu and Derek Clenna. So this is a sidebar, but my sister, like, that's how she knew him, and she was like, oh my God, you know what I'm gonna say to him? And she was kind of drunk. She was like, you know what I'm gonna say to him? And I was like, what are you gonna say? And she goes, I'm gonna go, Anastasia, she's alive, damn it. And she did say that to him, and he kind of went, huh? And then she was like, you know, cause, and had to like explain it. And he was like very nice. He was like, oh yeah, like, and laughed, and then like took pictures and stuff. But I literally was so embarrassed. I wanted to crawl into a hole and die when he didn't understand right away.
That is hilarious. I love that your sister did that.
I know. Me too. I just
and that would have been the same weekend where we sang karaoke together.
Yes, it was. It was. We had a really fun weekend, man.
Well, I guess we can go ahead and get to the show. So, yeah. As a reminder for everyone, Rate, Debate, Recreate is a show where Sammy and I, each week, will discuss two musicals. We'll each be bringing one to the table to discuss based on a theme that we create, whatever that week is, because it's our show and we can do what we want.
Yeah.
And each week, what we'll do is we will each discuss the shows, rate them out of 10, debate the merits of each show, and then because we are the experts in musical theater, we'll recreate a part of it to make it even better.
Yes, I think that's going to be kind of fun this week. I'm excited. But as we've mentioned before, we have a category each week, and this week that category is shows about war.
Ooh, absolutely nothing.
Absolutely nothing, except for Derek Clenna. So if you haven't guessed already, my show is Dogfight.
And my show is Miss Saigon.
Excellent. So should we get right into the summary of each one?
Yeah, let's go for it.
Perfect. I'll go first. So just to give you guys a little, summary of Dogfight. Okay, so where to begin with the extremely questionable setup of Dogfight, to say the least. So this show is about some dudes who are about to ship out to Vietnam, and they're going to have one last kind of big night on the town in San Francisco. And they decide that the best way to spend that night would be to have what is called a dogfight, which basically means they have a party, and the guy who brings the ugliest date wins some cash. It's
yikeroni.
Not what you want. So Eddie Bertlace is our entry point into this group, and he's out trying to find a date. He runs into Rose, who works at her mother's diner, and he decides she'd be a great pick. She's really excited. She's never been on a date, and Eddie is very handsome. He's literally Derek Quinn. So Logan's cat just walked into the frame. So Rose tentatively accepts, but she's really, really excited. And throughout the day, Eddie kind of starts to get to know her a little bit more, and he starts feeling really bad for inviting her, as he should. And Rose eventually learns that it's all a joke from one of the other dates, who is actually a sex worker that one of the Marines has hired to help him win. Shout out to Annalie Ashford. So she gets really pissed, and she literally tells Eddie that she hopes he goes to war and dies, which is a good times. And then Eddie and his friends continue their night, and there's another harrowing scene with a sex worker, but Eddie just feels so awful. He can't bring himself to continue on their night of debauchery. So he goes to find Rose and apologize. She reluctantly agrees to go on a real date with him, and she starts to sort of chip away at his bravado throughout the night. They end up having sex. It's kind of awkward, but sweet-ish. And he ships out the next morning in Vietnam, which I think the show actually portrays pretty effectively from what I've seen, as far as staging and lighting. But all of Eddie's friends die. And the whole show, they've been kind of portrayed as these big shots, ready to go war and be war heroes and glorifying violence all the way. So this hits Eddie pretty hard. I don't think it's what he expected. And especially when he comes back and there's kind of no honor in coming back because of how everyone felt about Vietnam at home, he is in a pretty dark place. So he goes back to San Francisco where Rose is, and the show kind of ends with them seeing each other again and embracing. Yeah. So I'm very conflicted about this show.
Same about both shows this week.
Yeah, very conflicted. I just want to preface, this has nothing really to do with the performance or even really the script. I think it's actually very well written and well crafted. I'm just conflicted about one particular thing. a few things, but kind of all centering around the same thing. I'm going to get on with it. I'm going to give it a 5 out of 10 as a show.
5 out of 10.
Oh, shoot. 5 out of 10. Woof, woof, babies.
Woof, woof. Derek Klena on the mind, clearly.
I literally cannot. I just can't. Okay.
Actually, I'll save this thought for the debate section. Okay, I'll talk a little bit about the synopsis of Miss Saigon and give my equally conflicted rating at the end. So Miss Saigon also takes place during the Vietnam War, and we see a few different settings for the show. The primary one is in Vietnam at a Saigon bar/brothel. And then we also have some scenes in America, namely Atlanta, which is kind of funny. And then the show ends in Bangkok. And throughout that time, we follow the protagonist, whose name is Kim. Kim is a 17-year-old girl who basically escaped her village being burned down by American soldiers, witnessed her family being massacred. And you find this out basically in one of the first few songs. So right off the bat, you know that we're dealing with some really serious shit. and also that Kim is a protagonist who has her fair share of trauma to work through. And throughout the show, that doesn't really stop. She is basically hauled in by the character who's called the engineer, who's basically this hustler that owns this joint in Saigon. And he allows American soldiers to come in and get drunk and buy these Vietnamese women for sex. So also kind of a fucked up line, especially because, as was stated in here, a lot of the women that he's working with, it's made very clear that they don't want to be there, but they either don't have any other options or were like taken in by him. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's the premise. Enter Chris, an American soldier who isn't like the other American soldiers and isn't all about booze and weed and sex.
He's not like the other boys.
Yeah, not like those other boys. And his soldier friend, Chris, or he is Chris, sorry, his soldier friend, John, convinces him to go with, or purchase, essentially, Kim from the engineer. So they go to this room. They have like a night where Kim reveals that she's never been with a man and doesn't know really know what to do, but they have like really good banter and rapport and end up sleeping together and having like a mini, like almost West Side Story-esque one night love story. It literally is one night. Mm-hmm. The next day they're like talking about how they're in love. They literally get married or have a wedding ceremony. It's kind of unclear actually if Chris knows it's a wedding or not. It's actually kind of a comedic bit at one point where he's like, what is this music? And Kim's like, it's the music that we play at weddings. And he's like, what, weddings? Like what?
Oh my God.
Anyway, I couldn't tell if that was just like a throwaway laugh line or if he literally didn't know. But enter Kim's cousin, Tui, who she was betrothed to from a young age. And so now there's this like, I wouldn't call it a love triangle because she has no interest at all in Tui. But her father, who's no longer alive, did promise Kim to this man. Mm-hmm. Basically, what comes next is Chris and Kim have this like version of a love story and kind of wanting to run away together. That doesn't happen. And you don't know why until the second act, but all you know is Chris goes back to America, Kim doesn't, and Kim basically lives in pretty severe poverty and just tries to like scrape by until 3 years later when Tui comes back to find her. And when he does, you, the audience, you and Tui both find out that she has a son, Tam. And Tam was conceived that one night with Chris. So that's the first act. The second act, I'm not going to give too much away, but basically we pan to Atlanta and what I think to be a really funny, oh yeah, I forgot that you're in Atlanta.
That's where I'm from. Sorry.
No.
Not really.
pan to Atlanta where it's actually, I think this is a really funny scene. The song Bui Doi, which is fucking phenomenal and beautiful. Mm-hmm. But it's like this charitable foundation that is helping the kids of Vietnamese women who were born from American soldiers during the Vietnam War. Obviously, like, great cause, but I think that in that song, there's a lot of critiques of American charitable culture. Mm-hmm. And I think that, especially, I work in a nonprofit, and I love where I work, so I'm not going to say that it's, like, similar in that realm, but I do think that I'm privy to a lot of what goes on in the charitable world, and not all of it's good, as many people have recently, I think, become really aware. And I think this song does a really good job of pointing that out. Sorry, that was not part of the summary, but
okay.
Anyway, from there, we see Chris understand that, or find out from John, who's running this organization, that he possibly has a son from that one night with Kim. And then we flash over to Kim, who finds out that Chris is going to be potentially coming to Vietnam. She has this massive nightmare and remembers the events of the day that Chris left and why she wasn't there. There's this fucking literally like life-size helicopter that goes on stage. Yeah. And I thought really hard about whether or not I talk about the end. I'm not going to talk about the end because it's a pretty big spoiler, but it's not the happiest of endings. I'm going to get into a lot of the details about this in my debate section, but I also am extremely going back and forth on what to rate this show. The context is that for the longest time, this was one of my absolute favorite shows. I saw it 3 times. The most recent time it came to Broadway with Eva Noblezada and John Briones. I thought it was phenomenal. Watching it for this podcast is the first time I've really watched it with like a really critical eye and also done a lot of reading on what especially Vietnamese people think about the representation in the show. And the more and more I read into it, the more like annoyed and disgusted I got at a lot of elements of the show. I don't think that the show is irredeemable, but I don't think that it's a good representation, especially when you consider that this is one of the only shows that casts specifically for Asian actors to play in, and this is the representation they get. And that's putting aside things like colorblind casting, but in terms of a role that is meant for an Asian person, specifically Vietnamese, but I think in that realm, Broadway is a bit more lax. Yeah, I think it's kind of ridiculous that this is like literally what The King and I and Miss Saigon.
That's it.
As like classic Broadway. And even in modern Broadway, like what is there? There's not much.
There's like a couple roles in Millie. That's it.
Yes.
We talked about that. Yeah.
So much like Sammy, I'm going to give the show a lower rating with the caveat that I think that this rating has absolutely nothing to do with the performances of either the original cast or the most recent Broadway cast able to see. I think the performances themselves were absolutely fucking phenomenal. I just think that the show, I was just made privy to a lot of issues with the show that I wasn't really aware of before. And that I'm gonna give Miss Saigon 6 out of 10 chocolate eclairs. Chocolate eclairs is a reference from the song American Dream when the engineer literally goes fat like a chocolatey eclair sucking out the cream of something really vividly. As I suck out the cream.
This is gonna be an X-rated podcast between chocolate eclairs and Eric Klena on stage, man. Well, I appreciate that. And I will say, I think, like, we've talked about our, like, inflated ratings in the past, but I do think that we're starting to, like, maybe lower them a little bit as we go on. Like, I think at the beginning we were, like, 9 out of 10, and then, like...
Yeah, I mean, it's so easy to get high and watch Legally Blonde the musical and be like, fuck, that's a 10!
Yeah. And, like, with something, like, even, like... Because, like, obviously, like, Broadway has, like, a huge race problem. And even, like, when I'm watching, like, West Side Story, it's easy for me to get swept up in, like, the dance and the romance and just be like, oh, my God, and the music, and not think about stuff like that. But I do hope that we're becoming, like, a little more critical of that and, like, able to look at it as we go along while still keeping...
Yeah, and especially as I'm now thinking, like, okay, well, when I rate this show, I'm also comparing it to the 9 shows we've done before this.
Yeah,
exactly. Or 18 shows, actually, that we've done before this. So I think that's also influencing that. And also, there's just a lot of fucked up stuff in Miss Saigon.
I was about to say, it's probably a special... Lots of fucked up stuff in Dogfight, too. But it's interesting because I guess we have to rate first. Then we can catch the discussion. Yeah. Sorry, we're getting ahead of ourselves. Okay. So I guess I'll rate Miss Saigon. I don't want to like give the caveat again, but I'm not judging any performances, anything like that. Like literally they're all beautiful. I'm going to give Miss Saigon, also a 6.
I'm going to give Dogfight a 6 out of 10.
Ooh.
Woof, woof. Whatever.
Woof, woof, baby.
Woof, babies.
That is like when they're calling everyone dogs, when they're literally calling women dogs. Great.
Okay, I think we both have a lot of thoughts, so let's just go ahead and get straight to the debate. I know that Dogfight is your show, but I have to have the first word because...
Go for it.
There is one glaring element of... I can't get over. And I know that this is a more superficial element, but... I know something we talk a lot about on this show is having to suspend disbelief, which is just something that comes along with musical theater.
Mm-hmm.
But how much are we expected to suspend our disbeliefs to believe that Lindsay Mendez and Annalee Ashford are the ugliest women that someone could find?
Retweet, first of all.
What?
Just like on a pure like self-esteem base. And I mean, I should like try to find like Lindsay Mendez or, and they do like give like Annalee Ashford like fake teeth, right? Like they do like
something. Yeah. Yeah. For her, they do make her uglier.
They, like,
for,
but, like,
or quote unquote uglier. But for Lindsay Mendez, they just give her kind of like a weird, hairdo.
Yeah. Well, anyway, can you imagine like getting the call from your agent and being like, hey, there's this show called Dogfight that requires us to cast like a lot of hot dudes and ugly girl. Like, what do you even, I don't, like, that's just like a whole like self-esteem issue that like, and like none of these women are like the word ugly is dumb. Like none of these women are ugly. It's just like a superficial, and I guess like I'll get into it because I have so many thoughts about, but like the idea of like casting for this show just makes me squirm. Anyway, so like obviously the show is like meant to be a critique of this type of masculinity, right? Like the how these men treat war, how they like view war and how they view women is obviously centered as bad. Like no one walks away from this show being like, oh, you know, maybe those guys had a point. You know, like but I think I'm just, what I really have trouble with, let me just get the positive stuff out of the way. I'll like kind of go through like what I think is interesting and like why I think like it's probably ultimately a good show, just maybe like I prefer my masculinity to be critiqued in other ways. Okay. So I think like, well, I think like this in particular, I think is like an interesting take on Vietnam. And I think you can compare this to Miss Saigon actually really well. Like you talk about Chris and how he's kind of like, oh, he's not like the other American soldiers. He's like very sweet and like not into sex, not into drugs. And he is kind of like corrupted by war in a sense. And then you look at these guys who are going to Vietnam. And I think we see a lot of Vietnam or media about Vietnam and media about war in general that specifically looks at someone who is like an innocent who is corrupted by war. And I do think it's interesting to like look at these guys who are like raring to go, like they're ready to go to Vietnam, they're assholes, and they're still corrupted by war. So I do think that's like generally a good thing to see, like the idea that a person doesn't have to be like the at the top of morality to go through something horrible is like generally a good thing. Like I thought a lot about, I don't know if you've seen Itania, and this is kind of a tangent, but like,
yeah,
she's like heavily abused in that movie and it is awful to watch, but she is like, normally if you see like women in movies going through abuse like that, like they're held up as some like paragon of virtue and she's not. And I think it's like an important thing to recognize that like, things like abuse and things like war are horrible no matter who they happen to. Like, that, it's just a bad thing. You don't have to be a perfect person for it to be a bad thing. And obviously, like, complicated characters make that story more interesting, right? But besides Eddie a little bit, I, like, wouldn't call any of these guys complicated. And this is kind of where I, like, start to have issues, right? So, like, the show and like what I really think about it is more complicated than this, but I just want to get it out of the way. Like I grew up on the date a girl on a bet trope. Like that's been done in every teen movie that we've all seen, like 10 Things I Hate About You. She's all that, like it's been done. Like I get it. Okay. Like we can like think of other ways to like be like male bet. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that's just kind of on like a superficial level. But I also think like, obviously the point of the show again is that this type of masculinity is bad and we shouldn't do this, but it's such an excessive example. It's like so hyper masculine, it's almost unbelievable. And I think like it's generally much more effective when you like look at toxic masculinity from a place where it like actually exists in the world. You know what I mean? And I don't know, maybe like I tried to look up if like people in the army really did this. And I couldn't find much. So if you know, please let me know. But it's so hyper-masculine and evil to a point that it's just like unbelievable to me that this could be occurring, if that makes sense. Maybe I'm naive, but like, I think it's a lot more useful to like examine a type of masculinity that can still be really, you know, like exaggerated and really bad without being unbelievable.
Yeah, sense. Yeah, I go back and forth because on one hand I agree, on the other hand I'm like, that shit does exist.
Are guys that awful? Am I like, naive?
I don't know. I obviously that's not, maybe not obviously, I hope so. That's not the type of masculinity that I associate myself with at all.
Yeah.
But I will say, I don't think that this concept is that far-fetched. Okay. And like, I, growing up, the majority of my life, honestly, like even through today, the majority of my close friends have been women or non-binary folks or people that aren't cis men. And I think a big reason for that is because a lot of the masculinity that I saw and I was made aware of when I was growing up was like to the level of this kind of stuff. I went to all boys school in middle school, which was its own experience. And like, I don't know. I think that like when people say locker room talk and that's just how guys talk, like,
yeah.
I don't think that they're that wrong a lot of the times in terms of like that shit does happen. I do agree that, when did this show come out? Like 2011, I think.
Something like
maybe
that.
Maybe earlier. Yeah.
I didn't do a lot of historical research on this because I got so swept up in like the mechanics of the story. But,
yeah. I do think that, I do agree that in this age, in the, you know, the 2010s, it's less overt perhaps. So maybe on that perspective. But especially considering that show, that this show is taking place during the Vietnam War, I actually don't know that I think that this is an exaggeration.
Okay, that's interesting, because I guess I think that, like, when I say this is unbelievable to me, it's not that, like, cis men don't do horrible things, because they obviously do horrible things. But it's more of, like, what I'm used to, I guess, is, like, oh, like, man, bet you can't fuck that girl, or, like, I bet you, but, you know, like, it's yeah. not... And this is legitimately find the quote unquote ugliest girl you can and bring her to a party. And that is just like, that's not like even in it for yourself. That's just mean at someone else's expense. And I don't know. It's just maybe.
Yeah.
I'm putting too
Do you much watch Pen 15?
No, but I know I should.
Biggest plug in the world to you and everyone I know. It's such a good show. But in the first season, there's a storyline around one of the stars of Ben 15 being named Eugis. And this is something that I know happened, like where I grew up was this concept of Eugis, and it stands for ugliest girl in school.
Oh my God.
Like the thing is I do think that sometimes toxic masculinity, it's like, okay, when you get to the core of what toxic masculinity is, men quote-unquote, aren't able to express their feelings because then they're not viewed as masculine, which is what you want to be viewed as a man. And so when we're not expressing our feelings, the ego does what it can to put you on a higher pedestal than someone else. Mm-hmm. So, like, again, that's why I don't think it's that far-fetched for there to be a competition to find the ugliest girl around in a group of men that are all experiencing horrible forms of toxic masculinity because of the time they're living in, the war that they fought, all that stuff. Like, I don't know, they probably do need to feel better about themselves by calling someone ugly, and that might be the only thing holding them on from like breaking away.
That's true. That's a good point. Yeah, I guess I didn't think of that aspect of it. I don't know. I guess and that is a really good point. But I guess in general, I think like when media shows like these, I don't know. The only like good example I can think of is like when you see like rape or sexual assault like depicted on TV. Like a lot of the times it's like a stranger in the night in a movie on TV. Mm-hmm. It's a stranger in the night. It's like this crazy hyper like masculine guy who's like attacking you. You don't know who he is. And in real life, it's like not what it is, you know? So I guess it's, I wish this, and maybe this is real life, and I'm just like willfully naive that this would happen, but I wish like the levels of toxicity that they express were like a little more grounded in something that felt more real to me.
Mm-hmm.
If that makes sense. Cause I think that like, cause when you see, again, like you watch these guys on stage, you're like, I'm not like that. I don't have that problem. Like, you know, and like, maybe you do have a problem like that. Just not that like high strung, I guess.
Yeah.
I don't know. And I guess I want to like what you said about, we can move into kind of Eddie specifically, like what you said about kind of guys being unable to express their emotions. Cause I think he does have that problem. And I, again, I realize like the point, kind of the point of the show is to show that like imperfect people, like, first of all, this masculinity thing is bad. War is bad, like on a grand scale. And then kind of to show like this relationship that forms out of a sense of like loneliness and pain, like on both parts. Like she's very lonely. She's never been on a date. Like a guy's never paid much attention to her. She's very lonely. He's experiencing something. Like he's about to go off to war, and whether he realizes it or not, like on some sense, he does realize that that's going to be probably pretty shitty.
Mm-hmm.
So he's obviously like kind of operating from a sense of like pain and loneliness. And I don't hate that part of it at all. I like, actually, I love the scenes between them, like hashtag Clendas. They have fucking incredible.
Yes, chemistry. They really, that chemistry, they especially the when together. They're singing.
Oh my God. Like Jesus Christ. I watched their Wicked stuff this weekend too. I was like, oh my God. Anyway, I think they like really hold the show together, and like the way they interact is really powerful. And I think Derek Klena, like from what I've seen, like, does a lot of excellent stuff and plays the role really well. But I almost think like, and I don't want to sound like an asshole when I say this, I don't think he like does enough to garner enough of our sympathy. And when I say that, I'm not saying, I don't mean when he goes to war and all of his friends die, because that is very sad. And like, no one should have to go through that. It is really awful. I'm talking about kind of before the war part.
Yeah.
Cause he goes on this kind of emotional journey. Like he goes from like hyped up and like cocky as shit and ready to like take on the world. And he turns to shame really quickly. And I think that's the biggest issue I have with it, is how quickly he's like, oh shit, I feel bad. Like, you didn't feel bad 2 seconds.
Yeah, it's definitely like a 180. Like 1 second he's like down to just,
he's like smearing lipstick all over her face,
mm-hmm,
as a joke. And then she says, oh, ha, ha. Like she doesn't notice that it's mean, which I think is also weird. And then she goes, oh, I just like want you to know how excited I am. And then he's like, oh, fuck. And I'm like,
that's what did it for you?
You didn't notice? You were just smearing lipstick all over her face. You didn't notice she's been excited the whole time? I think he goes from shame, from cocky asshole, to like feeling really shitty really quickly. And I don't think it like particularly works. But then I think like the move from like shame to like kind of her like chipping away at this bravado, which is also like another problem. Like, why does a woman have to take on your emotional labor and make you feel better about yourself and make you feel like you're a good person? I'm sorry.
Because that was, like, that's the society that we live in.
Sorry. It just, I read like, oh God, I'm going on tangents now, but like I read this review that I think did a pretty good job at kind of taking the point, kind of a counter argument to the like dogfight is misogyny, misogyny is bad argument, which I think I like mostly land on the side on, but I feel like a little complicated about. But this, it was a review in The Independent. It was written by a guy named Paul Taylor. But he said, he did a pretty good job, but he said one thing at the end, I really disagree with. He goes on and he says, like, Rose is by far the most intelligent person on stage. I think that's mm-hmm. true. She's definitely the most intelligent, emotionally intelligent, probably actually intelligent person on stage. But then he says something to the effect of about her making the decision to like give Eddie a second chance. He says, she draws out of Eddie the type of man worthy of her and her generosity. And I'm like, why does she have to draw that out of him? Like, shouldn't she? Like, that in itself is such a fucking trope. of like, oh, and we're all taught that, right? Like, take the bad boy, make him good. And I'm like, if this is supposed to be a subversion of all this, which I think it's like kind of written as like that type of thing, I almost think like maybe they shouldn't, maybe she shouldn't give him a second chance. Like, I don't know. I just, that's like the oldest trope in the book. And like, women always have to do the emotional labor of men, and I'm sick of it.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with, I think, everything that you said. One thing that I will say about Dogfight is, holy shit, the music.
Oh, God,
and
yeah.
Especially the harmonies in this show are phenomenal.
Yeah, I literally wrote down, those assholes can sing.
Yeah, those assholes can sing. Okay, I'll go ahead and talk about some of Miss Saigon for a bit,
yes,
and then maybe we can
go.
Have some back and forth.
Yeah.
You started with what you liked. I'm going to start with the problems of the show. I have listened to Miss Saigon and seen the show, like, unbelievable amounts of times. It's been one of my favorite shows. And I literally, like, until researching for this podcast, just was, like, blissfully unaware of a lot of the like fucked up stuff with it. So I am just kind of going to go down the line of what that is. Mm-hmm. First off, let's talk about the fact that Kim is literally 17.
Oh my God, I didn't know that.
Yeah, her first thing that she sings in the show is like, I'm 17 and I'm new here today. The village I come from seems so far away. Yeah, so like, that's kind of fucked
tough.
Up that she, yeah, I mean, it's tough. I mean, I guess like you could argue that it is real and that's a story that was real, which is, I think, fair to say. And I don't like how it's just like said like that and then not addressed again. Like, it's not, that's not something that comes up again, which is that she was bought by this American soldier. He impregnated her at 17 and then just goes away. Like, that's, I don't know, that's crazy. I think another thing that's important to talk about is that the first productions of this on West End and Broadway had the character of the engineer played in Yellowface by Jonathan Price. Which even at the time, which the show came out in like the early 90s, not that long ago, but a lot of people like to say, like, the time, you know, it's a relic of its time. Even then, it was a huge outcry by people to say, like, no, that's not what should be happening. So far that the equity, like, the actors' union literally said, you can't do this show on Broadway if you cast Jonathan Price in this role. And David McIntosh, creator of the show, was ready to call them on their bluff and did and won. And Jonathan Price won both the Olivier and the Tony Award for his role as engineer, which is just pretty fucked up because, as I was saying, like, we can talk about how good and bad the representation in this show is. I'm going to argue that it's not good. But, like, what a kick in the face to someone, to a community of people who aren't represented on Broadway. And the one time there is a role, even if it's not well written, it's a role that's specifically for an Asian person. And it's not given to an Asian person. It's given to a white man to like make a mockery of. That is just like insane to me. Like, at least in modern productions that I'm aware of and the most recent West End and Broadway revivals, that wasn't the case. And John Briones does a phenomenal job in that role. Yeah, so that's fucked up. The whole thing, there's like this white savior trope of like, okay, this is, again, one night, this whole thing happened. Similar to West Side Story, where we say it's just hard to believe that like you fall in love with this, and in West Side Story, it's, you know, falling in love with this guy that then kills your brother, and then you have to think that's okay.
Yeah.
I think it is easier to believe in Miss Saigon, mainly because, like, Kim is a 17, has gone through so much trauma in her life, and has something to hold on to from that one night, which is a literal child. Mm-hmm. That is, I'm sure, a constant reminder of that. So, like, I guess that does make sense, but I don't know. That to me is like, she has to be like saved by this man. Chris is certainly not the hero of this story, but at times I think is painted as one. I don't think that the Asian characters in this show outside of Kim get the nuance that they deserve. Maybe you could argue Engineer as well, but they just don't have nuance to them. Like the Vietnamese soldiers are just painted as like undyingly fighting for communism, which is such an American portrayal of that. Like, there's no way that you would have an American version of that where you're not providing some sense of nuance, where even if it's Derek Klena having some bit of a conscience, like stuff yeah. like that, you just don't see from the Asian characters in Miss Saigon. Another thing is it just has this like vision of transnational adoption as like the path for kids of color to experience success. And again, it's just like, no, first of all, no, it's this whole like show, I think, has a lot of elements of American exceptionalism in it, which is so funny to me because I really don't think that this show's not written by an American. And I think that this show like really parodies America in a lot of ways. And even through that, I think we still see a lot of American exceptionalist ideas bleeding through. I will say the adoption piece.
I was gonna say, ahead. Do you think it's like probably like Western exceptionalism?
Yeah, I do think it's umbrella, I think it's Western exceptionalism, but it's so hard to view it as that when Americans are it is America. Like, even though it wasn't written by an American, like it. The concepts and ideals are American, mm-hmm. And the soldiers. So, okay, my overall opinion on, like, the problematic elements of the show, I just want to sum up, like, as mentioned, and this is also not a comprehensive list by any means, but this show clearly has a lot of really problematic elements. I don't think that I want to say that the show should just never be done again and that this, like, you know, we can never do Miss Saigon again because it's beyond repair. That being said, I can 100% confidently say that this show cannot be the primary source of Asian representation on a Broadway stage. Like, yeah. Holy fucking shit, that can't be the case. And in my opinion, until we can perform this show from a place in society where we can just all universally acknowledge what's wrong with it and how it's a relic of this like horrible mindset of the past, I don't know how we can fix it. And we're certainly not there right now. Like, we are not at a place where we can assume that, which is really, really tough for me to say, because as I've said, like, prior to rewatching and researching for this podcast, I considered Miss Saigon to be like literally one of my top five favorite shows. Those are some of the problems that I've read about that I now hold from the show. I feel like I do need to like defend the show because obviously I'm talking about it. And I also do think that like, if as much as possible, like I'm not trying to say that we should put this to the side because obviously it's integral to the show and I don't think you can. That being said, there are a lot of like elements of this show that to me are fantastic, and the music and the grandiosity of the music is number one of those for me. I also think that Kim is a really, really wonderful protagonist. I think she is like one of the best women protagonists in musical theater, and is given what I believe to be a really nuanced take. Mm-hmm. And the whole like crux of her is she is like extremely selfless, puts other people above her to a detriment. I mean, I think like as clearly with how the show goes, but especially once she has her son, like I think what something we talk about a bit on this podcast is like turning points in musicals when, like, for example, in Legally Blonde after So Much Better, mm-hmm. like how her focus is no longer on Warner and it's 100% on herself and bettering herself and her legal career. I think that towards the end of the first act, she kills her cousin, Tui, in defending her son. And I think to me, that is a point, that is a massive point for her where her only focus after that, like she still cares about Chris, but the focus and like what I think is like the motivation behind that care is the safety and well-being of her son.
Will not touch him.
Yeah, you will not touch him.
You will not touch him.
which, by the way, like while talking about Kim in that role, both Lea Salonga and Eva Noblezada.
Oh my god.
What
fucking phenomenal women.
Holy phenomenal shit. Two powerful women to cast in this role. Like, and oh my yeah, god. I am of the opinion that hands down, Eva Noblezada deserved the Tony for her portrayal in this role over fucking Bette Midler. Like, I'm sorry. I get that we had a big name come to Broadway and she was able to like get big applauses and stuff. And I don't think she was bad by any means. I was able to see Hella Dolly, but like they were just, I don't put those performances in the same caliber.
I've told you this before, but I'll say it again for recording's sake. Our friend Becca, who's in cast with us, shouts to Becca. I was living in Nashville during that Tony season, and she was in town during the Tonys, and she was like, "Do you want to hang out?" And I said, "Yeah, let's watch the Tonys." And neither of us had like seen. I don't think either of us like really knew who Eva Noblezada was like at the time. Like I hadn't like heard of her, didn't know who she was. Saw the Tony's performance from Miss Saigon, like both, I have a vivid memory of being like, who the fuck is that? Like, she's incredible. And like, yeah. Lea Salonga, obviously, like, fucking icon, just like absolutely iconic in every way, but like, holy shit, Eva Noblezada is so fucking talented. And just, I just remember being like, well, she's gotta fucking win, right? Like, what's going on? Mm-hmm. God, that Tony performance is incredible.
Yeah, it really is. Yeah. And I do think that, like, Kim, at least, does get a lot of songs that I think provide a lot of nuance for her. There's this one song that I literally can't even remember right now. It is, it's the song This Money's Yours, and it's when Chris is basically like, look, like, I'm not like those other guys. I don't want this. I'm not here to take you to America and help you and all this stuff. And I don't know you. I don't know if you're lying or not. And Kim goes the fuck off on him and is like, you want to know me? You want to know what I've been through? Like, and just like in the most exasperated and confident and belty voice, just talks about all the trauma that she experienced between like her village burning down, literally watching her parents die, like all this stuff. And she's like, you want to talk to me about that? Like, bring it. I have had my share of pain and trauma. Like, there's nothing holding me back. I would rather die than, like, be some liar for you.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes.
Sorry.
So I do love that about the role of Kim. Yeah, and I guess the rest of my thoughts are either in the bop list or in what I'm going to talk about with the recreate. So before I get to my bop list, are there more thoughts that you wanted to talk about with Dogfight?
I just took some general notes that I'll run through a little bit. I wrote Derek Klena. I cannot say enough inappropriate things. I will spray oil. I noticed like just like weird funny things I noticed. Eddie has a bunch of like weird ass sayings he just says these weird almost sayings throughout, but they're like not quite right. Like some
what was
weird...
the show we did? West Side Story?
Yes.
Sleep and lizards,
like daddy-o, except he says like, which I guess this is a play on Dogfight, but it still just sounds weird. He says, "It ain't over till the fat lady barks." Okay. He also says, "My old man's always saying you can't steal second with your foot still on first. Sometimes you gotta gamble." He also says, "What a pick in a pinch," which I think is just a great saying. We should.
What a pick in a pinch.
What a pick in a pinch. We should bring that back. I think it's great. I also, kind of going down the line, I think "Hey Good Looking" is a wonderful song, but it has no right to be that good. And it's also like transphobic as fuck. like that's kind of maybe one of the examples. Maybe those guys would really react like that if that happened. That's probably realistic. But I already think they're assholes. There's no need. There's
yeah, no and here's need. Like the thing is like I'm not one to be pro censorship because no. I think that like transphobia is fucking real. So yes. Obviously we need to see it, but we need to
one
see
line.
It in a way that is like, look how bad this is. And that is not at all what happens in
it's
Hey Good Looking.
It's
like,
a joke.
It's a joke. It's a yeah. throwaway line. And it's not like, look how fucked up this person is for holding these beliefs and like yeah. invalidating this person's existence. It's like, haha, he thought it was girl, but it boy dressed as girl. Like, ha 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 ha. Like, yes. that's not funny.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that like, again, like conflicted about Dogfight, it does do a lot of things where you're supposed to be like, wow, these guys, assholes. But you also laugh at them quite a bit, and sometimes you're laughing in that kind of like Michael Scott way, like god what a dick, but like, oh, that is like played for straight laughs, I think, at least. And I think like you yeah. said something when you're talking about Miss Saigon, like about like her being 17 and how it's never mentioned again. And I think like people will make, I don't want to say excuses, because I don't think it's like necessarily an excuse, because they're right to an extent, like the argument that, oh, well, that's just like how it was in the 40s or the 50s or the 60s or whatever it was. But if you're just going to mention it and like play it for a laugh, or just like give it a throwaway line and not talk about it again, honestly, what's the point? Like, maybe yeah. that's a strong take, but like, I just think obviously the like marginalized people at the brunt of that probably felt similarly about it then to how they feel about it now, or things wouldn't have changed. Like, so to just say like, oh, well, that's how it was, like, oh, women were treated like shit, or minorities were treated like shit, I'm like, yeah, well, the minorities weren't walking around being like, oh, that's just how it is, like, you know.
Yeah, like why? There needs to be a wink to the audience yes. of like, this bad.
Like, why mention it if you're not going to comment on it? And I yes. do think, like, to its credit, Dogfight like does attempt to like comment on this type of misogyny. I just sometimes think it's a little unbelievable, and that is my personal preference. Anyway, "Come to a Party" and "Nothing Short of Wonderful." Ooh. The dramatic irony, again, I think this show is actually like written fairly well, like when all is said and done, for the most part. It's really fucking sad to just watch her be so excited. And also Lindsay Mendez, we've talked a lot about Derek Klena because I have the hots for him, but Lindsay Mendez and that fucking voice.
Yeah, she is the star.
Step all over me. She is so incredible. And all of Rose's songs are so insanely hard. Like, yeah. I don't know. And I'm really bad at judging the difficulty of men's songs, as you know from when I directed an original cast show and was like, you can sing this, right? So I'm sure all of his are really hard too, because he's very talented, but like, her songs are fucking insanely hard. Mm-hmm. Like, she's
they
so,
really are.
So talented.
Pretty Funny is, wow. God. I was listening to that yesterday and was just like,
the end.
The levels. The end. Pretty funny.
No, sorry. God. Oh my God. And then I have two more things. I do ultimately kind of love their connection, but I think that says more about Derek Klena and Lindsay Mendez than it does about, well, maybe not more than it does about the characters. That's what they bring to the characters. And I think that it's like a touching connection, but, and I'll get to this more in my recreate, I think it could be like explored further. And I also would be remiss if I didn't bring up the time that you thought the lyrics to Before It's Over.
Oh my God. I forgot about this.
So just like for background, and we're talking so much, but this is so fun. So the lyrics in Before It's Over, beautiful song, goes, see a world beautiful and strange. See a world beautiful and strange. Logan thought the
can word. Can we, no, before we say what I thought it was, I'm going to sing it for our audience because it's not like, the song's not like, see a world, like it's not that. The song is, see a world. I deadass thought it was SeaWorld. I was like, oh, she just wants to go away to SeaWorld. That's cute.
SeaWorld.
This was before I really knew what Dogfight was about.
You just heard the song and you were like, wow, a girl and her whales.
I mean, same. Like, I can relate to that. Sea lions are my favorite animal.
I too just want to hang out with the dolphins. So I don't know, fuck SeaWorld maybe a little bit, but yeah, that's all I really have. I also think the way War is portrayed is super effective, and Come Back, fucking incredible song, and the way they reunite at the end is fairly touching, I think. Yeah.
Coupé. Okay, I'm gonna just really quickly go through the bop list, and I feel like I usually don't do this, but I didn't do this much in my debate section, so I'm also just going to talk about some of the songs during this.
I basically just did that, so
yeah. Okay, well, I guess first, this is a show that I usually listen to all at once. Like, I'm like gonna listen to Miss Saigon, I do it, but not always. Not in the same way that Fun Home, I like literally, I don't really listen to the music from Fun Home alone that much. This, I definitely do. The Heat Is On, Movie In My Mind.
Oof.
Wow. Wow, wow, wow. The duet between Kim and Gigi. Gigi is the one who wins Miss Saigon the night of everything happening. Yeah, Movie In My Mind is a beautiful song that just like talks about the difference between the reality that they're in and the one that they want to be in, but can't live in because of their, you know, circumstances right now. The Dance. Why, God, why? This Money's Yours. Sun and Moon. This song is so beautiful. Yes.
Mm. I love that song.
The Wedding Ceremony is so beautiful. Last Night of the World. I Still Believe. This song I really love. It's the duet between Kim and... Oh, my God. I just realized in my summary that I never even talked about Chris Goes Back to America and marries an American woman. But it's a duet between Kim and that woman called I Still Believe. That one's beautiful. Morning of the Dragon. You Will Not Touch Him. No, you will not. I'd Give My Life for You. That is how we close the first act. Wow. I'd Give My Life for You is one of my all-time... I feel like I say this every episode, but it deadass is just one of my all-time favorite ballads in musical theater. Second act, we have Bui Doi. I love this song. I'm going to talk about it more in my recreate section. And I love it because it both is bringing like light to a really tough topic that is real. And it makes fun of America at the same time, which I like. Or at least I perceive it to. Kim's Nightmare. Amazing, amazing, amazing. Sun and Moon Reprise. Maybe. The American Dream. We are certainly going to talk about that one in my recreate. Mm-hmm. And then Little God of My Heart, the last song.
That's beautiful. Yeah.
A lot. I feel like I could keep talking for like a long time.
Also could, but I feel like then I get into my recreate a little bit.
Yeah. So should we get into our recreates?
Yeah, let's do it.
Who... You can go first. Boyfriend brought me a joint, so I'm going to smoke it while you do yours.
What a great boyfriend.
Yeah.
My dog doesn't do anything but it me when I'm trying to record. So This isn't super fleshed out just because I had a lot of thoughts. And I was trying to think about what I liked about this show and what I didn't like, and like seriously how I would change it and what I was more interested in, what I was less interested in, etc. So obviously the show, again, not glorifying this type of masculinity. It's bad. We know that. The creators know that. Everyone knows that. But I think the show does not do enough to absolve Eddie. And I already said this, like, I don't mean that he isn't punished enough or that he doesn't go through it, because he goes to Vietnam, all his friends die. It's very awful. But I think the relationship between he and Rose, like, I just, again, I don't really understand where his change of heart comes from. And I think her decision to link back up with him is pretty tropey in the sense that she is responsible for his emotional labor. So I don't think I talked about this before, but I really like the way the show is bookended. So the show starts with him on a bus after he's come from home, with Eddie on a bus after he's come home from war. So he's already been to Vietnam. He's already, you know, been through the fucking ringer. And then the show ends with him linking back up with Rose after he's also come back from war. So it's kind of bookended. And then we flash back to the time when he met her when he was in San Francisco. And I like the bookends, and I honestly like enjoy the sadder, more sensitive parts of this musical better. And I think they are far and few between. Like, we spend a lot of time on asshole Eddie and his asshole friends fucking up, fucking around, engaging in debauchery. So I wonder if there's a way we can do this to where we can, like, maybe move the beginning of the story. So we start with Eddie on the bus and then move the beginning of the story up a little bit. So, like, we don't end with them reuniting. Like, that is maybe a midpoint. And then we can see them kind of continue on through that relationship a little further after that. Because I am, like, kind of really interested in how that relationship continues.
Yeah.
Because he hurt her severely. He has obviously been through some unimaginable pain. So that's, again, like, and I think the most interesting bit of the story is two people connecting over their loneliness or connecting over their heartbreak. And, like, what is more heartbreaking than, like, the guy who was an asshole to you coming back positively broken from this war, and you were, and we don't know what she's up to. She is, like, purely a symbol, kind of, at the end of this show, right? Like, she is this perfect, quote-unquote, thing he left behind. And he's coming back to, because it's the only thing he has to come back to. But what does that look like after the fact? So I wonder if there's a version of this show where we start with him on that bus, but continue with him on that bus, and then, like, keep flashing back to the, you know, night before war dogfight-esque parts kind of throughout this show. And I think, and again, like, I'm perfectly, Willie, stop, sorry. That was my dog scratching the floor. And I'm perfectly fine with having, like, an imperfect protagonist. I don't think there's no version of the show where Eddie is, like, a good guy, you know, at the beginning of it, at least. But I wonder if, because we are supposed to sympathize with him at some point, I think, before he goes to war, we are supposed to feel like he is at least a little bit worthy of this woman. And I wonder if that would be easier to swallow if we were able to see more of him after he came home. So essentially, like, the show would function as, sorry, dude, what are you doing? Okay, he stopped. Essentially, the show would function more through flashbacks, but we would also get to see, like, more of Rose and Eddie together after the fact. And I think if we were able to see it more than him just, like, obviously traumatized, sitting morose on a bus, we could, like, begin to connect with him a little bit more. Because I think Come Back is, like, one of the strongest parts of the show. It's a fucking beautiful song. He literally kills it. I don't understand how he sings that high because he is a male, but that's cool. I just wonder if we get to see Eddie in more of those types of moments, especially in conjunction with Rose, and see past how Vietnam has traumatized him, because I think that's really the surface of what you get in the actual show that we see. We only see, like, the surface of this trauma, But if you really start to dig in into how the experience has actually changed him, those flashbacks might be easier to stomach, if that makes sense. Like if we see like the changed man before us, we might be like a little more willing to like, maybe you're not supposed to cut him some slack. I don't know. You are supposed to sympathize with him at some point. I don't think that's like anything that anyone can like cut away. But I don't know. I know that part of this is people aren't perfect, but I think there's a difference between an imperfect person and a guy who exploits you. And I think we should just be a little bit clearer on why she goes from, I hope you die in Vietnam, to, okay, I'm down. And I think having that context would make her a little less of kind of a Mary Sue-ish character, which I think, while she's a good character, I think she tends to fall into that, especially when she's kind of absolving him of any emotional like labor. And I do actually like the fact that she is like genuinely given the space to be angry, and she says, I hope you die in Vietnam, because that underscores that underscores like the whole like, you know, these are imperfect people. But I think that's one of the only places she's like given the space to be mean and like be imperfect. And she's obviously sad and angry, but that's one of the only places we get to see it directed at somebody else. The rest of the time, they have that conversation outside of her house, but the rest of the time she's kind of focused on absolving him a little bit. So I just think what he did was so goddamn awful. I see no reason for her to turn her back on what he did. So part of me wonders if this would have been better, like, if, I don't know, if it would have been better if we like scooted up the timeline a little bit to see them after the fact, or even if it would have been better if their night before he ships out like ends with that conversation out the doorway. Like they don't have sex, he ships out, and he still comes back. Because I still think they were able to like at least garner a little bit of a connection before she eventually decided to go on that second date. I don't know. I just wonder, I think the show makes me question more about like what their relationship was like after the fact. I'm more interested in that than I am interested in the whole dogfight scenario.
Yeah, I really like the idea of telling it in flashbacks, but the whole story is like in the present, which is
because they do that
years removed maybe from the situation.
They do that a little bit, but basically the whole first act is a flashback.
Yeah.
So like, and the second act pretty much too. I don't know. So
yeah, I would almost argue though that like the beginning is just like that's the flash forward.
No, you're right.
You, like, you get a flash forward, and then the rest of the show goes back, and then you meet again there.
You're totally right. So I guess I just want to reverse it and scoot it up a little bit. Yeah.
I stand and support.
Thanks.
So for my recreate, I thought a lot about this one. So the headline is, as I've talked about so much this episode, I love this show. I really love this show so much. So for a while, I was like, maybe my recreate will be like a critical deep dive into how to actually make the show less racist, less problematic, etc. I went down a lot of internet holes and think pieces and stuff around Miss Saigon. And ultimately, it's not my place to rewrite the show and to make it less problematic. Like, who am I as a, you know, white boy from Texas? Like, I'm not going to be able to accurately represent what Vietnamese people want and need to see in a show like this. So I'm not even going to try. But one thing that I can do as a white boy from Texas is lean even deeper into one of the parts of the show that I really love, which is the making fun of America side of it.
Hell yeah.
So for my recreate, I'm going to leave it up to the people who should be rewriting or scrapping altogether Miss Saigon. They can do those parts. What I'll do is add some elements where we could poke even more fun at America. And I do think that doing this could help in some ways with the, like, the winking to the audience and being like, look, we know what this is. And we're not, like, we're not on any side here. Because there is a Willy. Sorry, all Willy just showed up on the camera. Because there's a lot of, yeah, of nuance here, and I don't think that the show like takes a stance, you know, in terms of saying like the Americans are good, the Vietnamese are bad, or anything like that. But just like I was talking about, the portrayal itself is what gives in to a lot of that American exceptionalism, even as it is like actively parodying America. So, there are three main areas that are currently in the show that I think we could amp it up even further. And then I have a concept to add to the show. So the three areas that I think the show actually already does, and I don't think it does it poorly, but I do think that it can just be amped up and made a lot more obvious. The first is this concept of American guilt. There's one line in particular that just made me laugh out loud where Chris goes, "I'm an American. How could I fail to do good?" And it's just like, and it's not told, like, you're not supposed to be like, yeah, like Americans do good. but there is a lot of this concept of like, we didn't do enough. Like Americans didn't give their imperialism enough to Vietnam.
Yeah, sure.
And I almost wonder if like, if making that so much more obvious could be a really good way of being like, yeah, it's also pretty fucked up that America just wanted to impose like their imperialism on Vietnam, like they do and have done with many other countries.
Yeah.
So that's one area. The second is the song "Bui Doi." First of all, I feel like I'm like talking about this song a lot. It's, it's actually one of my favorite songs from the show. It is a absolutely beautiful song. It's just also like when you see it in the context of the show, it's like a charade. And I don't know if this is how it's meant to be perceived, but I perceive it as a parody of like American charities. So Americans like really love the concept of charity. It's like, I'm sorry, I need to pause. Get out of here.
It's okay. Kitty.
Okay, I was dealing with a kitty issue. So Americans really love the concept of charity and love to be able to live their lives, but not take responsibility maybe for some of the harm that's done by this notion of giving to charity. I think that that's something businesses do a lot of as well, not just individuals. But yeah, I think that this song, "Bui Doi," does a really good job of diving into an extremely tough topic. Like, "Bui Doi" is the real name for kids born to Vietnamese women from American soldiers, and they did face, like, a lot. And I'm sure, I don't know, actually, I don't want to say that they still do, but definitely, like, faced discrimination. But yeah, what makes this song good is that it's through the lens of an American charity foundation raising money for these kids.
Yeah.
So they're not tap dancing about like the kids. They're like literally doing this almost like over the top. If you give 5 cents a day, like Sarah McLachlan style.
Oh my God.
You know, showing sad images of kids while they're singing with their like deep hearts. And I think that that contrast is like both touching and funny. One of the lines from that song is literally, they are the living reminder of all the good we failed to do. Yeah, but it's also like, I can just so imagine like a nonprofit in the US that's raising money for, you know, a kind of broad cause that's maybe a foreign cause and being like, these kids, like, America can't save them, but you can. That kind of message. So I just think that leaning even more into that song is another area. And the last one is the song "American Dream." I'm just going to say right now to everyone listening, if you have not seen this song performed live, look it up. Not the Jonathan Pryce version, obviously, the John Briones version. This is like where I think it's abundantly clear that this song or that the show is not idolizing America, despite some of it bleeding through at times. The whole song is just a parody of what we consider to be the American dream and the perception of that by other countries and stuff. So I was going to say we could do this even more, but to be honest, I don't know how we can. Like, literally, people are like Vegas dancing in red, white, and blue and top hats, and then like a huge car comes out and the engineer literally is like fucking this car.
Yeah, he's like literally grinding on the car.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. And the Statue of Liberty is in the background. Like, it is so over the top. So I actually don't know what I could add to that. But the one thing that I think we could add to the show is a song, or rather either add it or just amend a song to include this. So we have a song called from the Vietnam groups show, and it depicts them as just kind of like, again, this is when I was talking about they're not given nuance. They're just depicted as these really one-note soldiers who are willing to do anything for their communist overlord. Like, literally in the background is just a massive statue. I don't even know who the statue's of, but I'm assuming like the leader at the time. Maybe. This is where I admit that I just like don't remember history.
Right.
Yeah. Anyway, it's like so over the, yeah, it is Ho Chi Minh. It's so over the top. It's so like, I don't know. Again, it's not giving nuance to these characters. It's just like, we obey because that's what we do. Yeah. But here's the thing. I think that is certainly the case with American soldiers as well. So
yeah.
What I was thinking would be a good addition would be for that song to be sung by both the Vietnamese soldiers and the American soldiers and contrast the differences between the armies there. But I think you could also just throw in some jabs at American exceptionalism in there. And like I was saying, that whole song is performed in front of this huge, like, communist leader statue. And I think it would be so funny if that was contrasted with the American troops doing some just as crazy shit in front of Lady Liberty or yeah. Uncle Sam, or like some like crazy depiction that is really associated with America. Because again, like, let's be real, especially when we're talking about the Vietnam War, like, these troops didn't know what they were doing. They're not like doing good. Like, it just is a really fucked up situation all around. And I just don't, I think that they make fun of America in this show, but I don't know that they really show that aspect in this show. So I think having an over-the-top, like, number, and I think it would be really cool because you could have the songs overlap in the way that musical theater songs do. Like, and like how the other half with Millie, where they go over and they intersect and have the same thing, and maybe they're marching across the stage and Lady Liberty shifts to one side and the statue moves to the other. I don't know. I think
they
that
merge,
could be,
like,
yeah, they merge into one.
In the Harry Potter movie where Voldemort and Harry merge into one
exactly.
face.
That's what happens. So, yeah, my recreate is basically, I think that this show should just be more self-aware and poke more jabs at America. And one of the ways that we could do that would be by adding that element to the song and leaning in even further in the ways the show already does do that.
You can always poke more fun at America. This is a general rule.
Amen.
So. Wow, that was really great. We've been talking for such a long time.
Yeah, this is a long ep.
This is a long ep, had a lot to say, but should we preview next week?
Yeah, let's go for it.
This is a hilarious category.
Yeah.
I'll say it. Okay, drum roll, please.
Ba-da-ba-da-ba.
Next week's category is shows that start and end with a vowel.
Ooh, start and end with a vowel.
Double trouble.
So let us know what your thoughts are. Guess what the shows that we're talking about next are. And
so
look forward to seeing you or hearing us then.
Look forward to you hearing us then. All right, everyone. Goodbye.
Bye. That was fun.
Red.